Like usual, I'd like to learn something on Hanukkah that will give us some depth in Hanukkah. The Sefer I'm learning from is Or Gedalyo. We've learned it many times. Or Gedalyo is Rabbi Gedalia Yeshua, who was in many ways the first American product to be Adam Gadol. He was somebody who had a hand, both of a major Talmud Chacham, and also a lot of he had a big hand in Hasidus and in Machshava, and was able to give it actually in a way that was understandable by a lot of people, accessible. So I like his pieces a lot. We've done a few of them over the years, Nifnyanim, and this is a piece on Hanukkah. We'll do the piece on page 66, Beis. So in Mos Sur we say Uparzu Chomos Migdalai, that the Yevonim came and they breached the walls of my fortifications, towers, fortifications, which could be just kind of a poetic expression of somebody who has made serious inroads, dented Klal Yisrael, etc. So he compares it to a Mishnah, and he says the following. The Mishnah says, "B'Mishnah Midas Perik Beis Mishnah Gimel." It says, "Lefanim imena sura gavu asara tfachim." The Midos is a Masechta Mishnayis that maps out the Beis Hamikdash, and it has the different walls, and it's a sort of ascending order in Kedusha. So you had the outside walls. Lifnimi menu sorig of asar tfachim. Sorig means like a lattice work that was tall 10 tfachim. That's not quite very tall. V'yud gimel pirtzis hayisham. There were 13 breaches in that sorig. Sheportzu malchi yavim, that the kings of Yavin had breached. V'chazru v'gadrum, and they were fixed. And then they were goza 13 hishtachavos, meaning they would bow 13 times at each one of these breaches to sort of rectify what they had done. That's a Mishnah in Midos. Now, whenever you have a number like that, an event like that, it doesn't seem to us a significant event. Yes, they had come and they had broken into Yerushalayim and so on, but 13, exactly 13 breaches, is that very significant? The fact that it was in that wall in particular, you obviously, to get to an inner wall, you had to somehow get through the outer wall, so they must have done some damage there as well. And then to mark that always when you'd walk by you'd have to bow over there, is there a reason why that happened? So he says like this. The Tosyontif points out, ki hasoreg hoya kidei loseis makom vehevdol bein ha'akum and chasen spal beis Hashem ulehavi korbanis ubein Yisrael ki akum asurim lekonis lechayil. This is a break out of the Kedel. So Tosyontif says the significance of the soreg was that Goyim were allowed to daven Beis HaMikdash, they were allowed to come and bring Karbanis. They had to stand, Chazal made, Chachamim made a line, when that was the Soreg, that said Goyim can only come up to this point, and from this point onwards, it's Dafke the Jews. Ayin Shem, Uba Soreg Azeh, it was that particular one, Partzu HaYevonim Yud Gimel Pertzis. So obviously this was a point of contention. Now let's think a little bit about it. Today it's kind of obvious. Segregation is a terrible thing, and segregating Jews from Goyim, that would be why. So they sort of broke that down. Now, if they really wanted to, they could have become Jewish. If they're so eager to come to Shul to Daven, so they could become Jewish. There was some, and it wasn't as if it's another thing. For instance, if let's say the dominant society is Jewish, and you're trying to get in and you can't because the Jews don't let you, okay, I understand that also. Yavin was an empire. Judea was a province. It was a nice province. Wasn't particularly fantastic. The Yavonim didn't live there. So to come, and there was some special point of contention that Chazal is trying to point out. And that point of contention expressed itself in those pirtzes. What is it? So he says like this: Ki Yavonim hiskimu shebeis hamigdash. Rak shem rotzu levatel kedushas habayis, v'she kedushasum yecheres akam Yisrael. The Yavonim had a problem with this concept of the kedushas habayis being restrictive, being something that wasn't all inclusive. That was their problem. The kedushasum yecheres akam Yisrael, v'she am Yisrael mekudashim yoisim shar umos. The difference between Yisrael and other umos, v'sahevdel hazos bein Yisrael la'amim v'ayvonim lakor. That was the point that they were especially annoyed with. V'lochein portzu yigim appearances basoreg. That's why they made a point of breaching the soreg, which was sort of symbolized that line of demarcation between Kal Yisrael and Masolam. Shor mechitza mavdelos bein Yisrael la'amim. So that sort of seems to be a statement. You can come to Reis HaMikdash, you can offer prayers, but you're not innately a citizen of it. You're not part of it. So let's understand a little bit about this point over here. He will elaborate on it later on, but I would like to speak about it first, and therefore we'll get to it. Let's think a minute about the of all the enemies we faced, Yavon was the one that was closest to what Klai Yisrael symbolized. They were intelligent people. They searched for truth. They searched for meaning. They searched for many of the things that we search for. And as opposed to Nebuchadnezzar, who was arrogant and out just for power, so too Rome. Paras was extremely crass and material. Yavon is the one that's really closest to us. And like always, when something is very close, sometimes there's a lot of friction and the contrast stands out a lot more strongly. So what was the contrast? They were close enough and they were similar enough. What's the issue? So I'd like to make, and again, I'm borrowing from what he says later on because I think it's helpful to understand beforehand. Aristotle did a lot of thinking about God, and he came up with an image, I don't mean a physical image, but he came up with a concept of God as a prime being and so on. And in certain ways, not dissimilar from our understanding as far as, you know, his transcending figure and so on and so forth. The great distinction was in picturing who we are and who God is. Let's understand what we mean over here. If I take an atom bomb, it is incredibly powerful, far more powerful than I am. But when I sit and study it and understand how it works, in a certain sense, I'm the master of it. I have discovered how it works. I can explain it. I can play with it. It starts with me. I'm the center. My understanding is the center, and my mind can understand it, process it, and so on. So when Greece put the human mind as the center of the world, it basically said, we understand, and if we think hard enough, we can understand whatever it is to understand about God. It has nothing to do, understanding God has nothing to do with God. It has to do with me. So if I'm smart, I can think a lot, maybe I won't know everything. But at the end of the day, knowledge, understanding, grasp starts with me. It's in a certain sense, that's the world of academia. A person, if you think, you have the world between your two temples. That's where the world is. We have an extremely, extremely different sense of it. There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he allows himself to be understood by wherever he wants it. And what's required is a closeness. So in order for me to be privy to God and understanding, then I need to be close to him. Just like if whatever I have, I give only to the people that seek my closeness, my close friends. The relationship is understanding Dasu Tevunas Mipi Hashem. Understanding comes from God, and therefore I need it. It's a direct result of that relationship. I don't just mean a Siyata Dishmaya. Well, Hashem is there, he has all the power, so if he wants to, then Chas V'Shalom, I cease to think. If he wants to, my brain is on steroids, and I know and understand more. It's not like that. It's just like when I have a very close friend, and I want to say, I know my friend, I understand my friend. It's a function of my friend allowing me in. You know, there's a certain person who's a sort of an all-knowing psychologist, and I sit and examine this person and everything about him. But then there's a relationship where somebody opens up to me because I'm close to him and so on. We understand that anything within this world, maybe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us freedom to understand and to analyze. It's part of our bechira and ability to do things. But when we turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the human mind is a product. It's not a master of it. So we have a radically different approach, and it's in everything. The Yevonim didn't feel the word... Hashem was not a personable entity. It was a fact. It was like an equation. It was something that existed and produced the world. But to say that it connects didn't mean anything. And therefore, the only thing that to me exists is my understanding. My mind, my understanding. I take HaKadosh Baruch Hu and put him under my microscope and use my brain, and I'm able to understand as much of it as is possible. Our understanding is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a being, and he allows humans to connect, and connect means by understanding. And therefore, it's how close I am versus how smart I am. That picture means that only the people that choose to be close to him. The difference between Klal Yisrael and other nations is not absolute. Anyone can pick himself up and join Klal Yisrael if he accepts the obligations and what it entails to be Jewish. If a person does that, then he has the same, then he's like Klal Yisrael. But until he does that, he's not the same. And a person who doesn't particularly seek HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that we seek, then it's fine. Go your way, I go my way. But you don't belong inside. That was a bone of contention between us and Yavin. And that's why they broke through and they said, this is rubbish. God is an idea, it's a concept. The person who's bright enough and understands enough, which is us, we're there. And that's it. So he says like this: V'yesh lefarish u'bepashas mefarshim shuhodo l'Hashem yisbarach shechnir machaz yavan. So what is these hashtachavos about? What are these bowing? So on surface you can say it's a form of thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we're victorious and so on. V'yesh lefarish ke'elo yudgim l'hashtachavos hem neged hayudgim ol midah shel rachmim. These 13 hashtachavos are a parallel to the 13 meters of Rachmim. Ki omru chazal sheishchir val kol echad misor leilach bedak Hashem isparach valachte bedrachov mahu rachum afata rachum. So he says like this, Yud Gimel Midas Arachmim are the 13 attributes of God that we mention on Yom Kippur, on special days of Tainis, whenever we mispallel for some special rachmim. And we say Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, Vechanun, and so on. The Gemara says that there's a mitzvah Volachta Bidrachov. Volachta Bidrachov means that besides doing wonderful mitzvahs, as the Shulchan Aruch says, there's a general mitzvah to emulate God, to imitate God. Mahu afato, like him, so to you. And the phrases that they use, mahu rachum afata rachum, mahu chan afata yechanun, are a reflection of these middos. So if we're to ask ourselves, what are these 13 middos? They are expressions of how Hashem interacts with the world, and we need to be like it. I want to explain why that is and what he's driving at. What is this mitzvah to be like God? Can we ever become personally God-like? The answer is obviously not. We're flesh and blood, and we'll never, I mean, we're not talking about reaching a level where we are God. So what is the point of imitating Hashem? What's the point of it? The point of it is, let's give an example. Imagine somebody has a child, and they want to have a close relationship. And this child is into music, very musical. The father is not terribly into music, but he'll make an effort to get into that world so they can connect to the child. A person is interested in marrying somebody, and that person has something that occupies their person. So even if it's not natural to me, I will make an effort to get into that world because I want to connect. In other words, we connect with people that are similar to us. A person who is very different, I can say hello, hello, but there's no connection. Mahu af'ata makes the who, the him, and the at and the you close enough. So the purpose of imitating HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not so that we ourselves become on a very high madrega, because we'll never, I mean, it's even kind of unspeakable to say we will be God-like in that sense. But we will be godlike so that the world that is the divine and our world will resonate with each other. It's like if you whistle at a certain pitch and something resonates to that, even if it's standing across the room, it'll resonate with that. We will not resonate with Hashem if our world has no connection to His midas. If our personal world has a roughness to it, it has a insensitivity, whatever is the opposite of Rachum Chanan and Erech HaPayim, if our world is not like that, then we'll never connect with Hashem. We can reach whatever perfection we have can reach in us, but connect with Hashem we can't. So those Yud Gimel, that number of Yud Gimel, he says, has overtones of that Mahu Afata of those Yud Gimel Midas. Upirish Rashi, V'loshen V'anveyu Anivahu, Ese Atzmoy Kimoisoy Lizdabek Bedrachav. Where do we learn that a person is supposed to be like Hashem? It says, Ze Keli V'anveyu. This is my God, and I will beautify him, beautify myself, Anivahu. So Rashi says, I will make myself like him in order to be able to cling to him, to cleave to him. I want to add one more point to this Vanvehu that I think is also in the meaning of this Vanvehu. The pasuk says, Ze Keli Vanvehu, I will beautify myself. Of all the things that we do for ourselves, a person eats because he likes eating, a person lays down because he's tired, because he enjoys laying in bed, etc., etc. Polishing up, making oneself beautiful, is always towards the other. In other words, it's not something that is, if I were living on a desert island, I would look a lot more schlumpy than I do now, because who am I dressing up for? Who am I making myself up for? So yes, maybe there are a small group of people that really have that innate need, but my feeling is that also comes because they're always naturally tuned to crowds or whatever it is. It's kind of, but the beauty is something that is a mechanism for connecting with the other. So the Zekeli Van Vehu, the introduction of the concept of Van Vehu, is a Nivahu. In beauty, in the sense that in Vehu meaning beauty, that then includes the Nivahu as part of that. This concept that we become connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu becomes something that was irritated Yevanim. There's something they were very against. And that's why they tried to breach it, and we do the Yishtachavah.
Is there a connection between Greek obsession with beauty and this idea of the Anveil? Because he doesn't call it out directly, but
I don't know. In other words, the Anveil we're talking about here is Klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, the idea that, let's discuss, maybe it's a digression a minute, but I think it's also important. The Gemara learns Van Vehu. Two things the Gemara learns from it. One is beautifying mitzvahs, that mitzvahs are need to be. It is appropriate that one spends more money to do mitzvahs in a way that is more beautiful, a nicer menorah, a nicer little venesrig, nicer tzitzis, etc., more mehuder. And then this concept of anveyu anivahu mahu afata. The truth is, both of them come from the same idea. In other words, we can look at mitzvahs as something we're obligated to do because Hashem has authority over us, and that's the way it is. You've got to do what you're told to do. Okay, it's an approach. It has truth to it. I can do it for another reason. I can look at myself as wanting to perfect myself. I want to be a great person. How is a person a great person? So, you know, somebody very crass will say if you have big muscles. Somebody else will say if you have a lot of money. Somebody else will say if you're a good person. But at the end of the day, it's self-centered. I want to be a good person, even if it's not so that people say nice things about me. But just so it means learning a lot. It means controlling yourself a lot, etc. But then there's something else, and that is, I want to form a connection. And that, so if a person does a mitzvah to be yotze, I'm doing what I was told to do, there's no way in the world that making more than I was told to do would be of any significance. If a person does it because he wants to be considered fine and good, well, the Torah said that X amount of this means that you've done what tzitzis accomplishes. Vanveyu means I take something else into consideration. I would say, imagine somebody is a chassan and he goes into a jeweler's to buy a ring for his collar. And they ask, and the person asks him, what kind of ring would you like? The usual is, I want something that will make her the happiest in the world. I want the best you have. We'll talk about money later, but I want the best you have, and so on. That's a fairly typical type. Imagine a guy comes in and he says, you know, I want the cheapest one that will not break the engagement. I want, you know, what I need to do. So let's leave it there. It doesn't take much of a psychologist or shatran to say, you know, there's an issue here. We're going to need, this is going to need some work over here. Because in that type of relationship, you know, a car, you can say, I want something that will get me from my house to my workplace and not run into problems. That's all I want. That's reasonable. But when you're talking about something where there's a connection to somebody else, that's highly unreasonable. The Greeks, you know, believed in great people, in big people. And by the way, Aristotle was held in great esteem by Chachmei Yisrael. They saw in him a person who had personal greatness, a brilliant, searching for Chachma, and in many ways, but a totally barren. No, his world did not include a personal God. It included self and nothing more. That is the exact opposite of us. It's exact. Because Achashverosh with his feasting is not the exact opposite of us. It's sort of off to a side. It's crass. We don't. That for somebody who's a real Baal Nefesh, has no shaykh. But here you have, yes, they believed in the word noble. What is the noble person? What is the virtuous person? What is a great person? Those the Greek philosophers were preoccupied with it, and it's fascinating. If you look at many of the early commentaries, they were very happy to use Aristotle's thoughts, let's call it, what's the right word for it, procedures, process, analysis, to be helpful. They used it. They felt that he was onto something. The one thing that they felt clearly was it was self-centered. It included nothing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And every so often they point out, this is why he made a terrible mistake in this and this and this. Because his version of the good and the perfect was the person himself, and that was that. So he says, the musig of Kedusha and Klal Yisrael. So when we're talking about, accomplishments, what does it mean that Klal Yisrael is different than a guy? I mean, if he's bright, he will understand as much as I will understand. It's what kind of prejudice is it to say that I'm smarter than him, or he's not going to understand if he puts in as much effort with as much brain power as I have? But once it's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's a different world. And therefore he says, V'lechein tikmar shnoi yud gimesh tachvoishu inyan shal hachno ubitel v'yisparach. So he says, the key piece of connecting HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu into your own world. There was one of the great Hasidic movements was called Kutsk. They were very, very extreme in many ways. They demanded a tremendous amount of self-analysis, tremendous amount of fidelity to Emes. It was an extraordinary movement. As such, it's not around today. Ger is sort of a branch of it. And somebody asked the Kutzke Chassid, tell me a point that Kutz makes that you feel is like a core value. So he said, let me ask you a question. Where does God exist? He says, what do you mean? God exists everywhere. He says, in Kutz they taught us, God exists wherever you open a door and let him in. In other words, don't give me the stuff God is everywhere. Of course he's everywhere. What does that have to do with you? And the key point is, in as much as I am self-assured, smug, confident in myself, so do I really need a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Does he really need? So there's no room for Kadosh Baruch Hu. Where Kadosh Baruch Hu exists, you know, as far as Kadosh Baruch Hu is concerned, is not really our business. What really concerns us is, where in my life can he exist? So the first piece that's important is what's called hisbatlus. I need to say to myself, I am here as a vehicle for the divine in terms of what am I going to do in this world, what's my mission, whatever it is, it's what do I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of me. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will fill me with a divine spirit, will give me an standing stone. If I'm not interested in understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu as such, so it's just like, imagine you have a conversation with somebody, a stranger, you sit down, and you have a feeling that this person is making conversation with you because he needs to make conversation for whatever reason. How much of yourself are you going to willing to give over? Not much. If you feel the person has a real interest in you and the person really, really wants, the person cares about you, it means something in him wants to understand me. I'd be very inclined to do it. I once spoke to somebody, I was trying to encourage somebody to see a professional of sorts, and the person resisted, and I told the person, you know, I'm not a professional, I can't really help you more than just a casual conversation, why don't you go to a professional? He said, I'm not interested in speaking with somebody who's talking to me for the money. You know, but he was billing me by the hour of my tzaras are his parnasa. He doesn't care about me, but that. So it's a very exaggerated, you know, a good therapist is somebody who cares about other people. But I'm just giving you the flavor of it. So if a person doesn't care about Ribbono Shel'olam, it's either me or Ribbono Shel'olam. If it's about me, then it's about myself, and that's all it is. Then there's no room for someone else to come in. And that's why they would bow. Bowing is an action where I level myself. Let's talk about this. He speaks about it later, and again, we're not going to have that much time, so I'd rather talk it out a bit. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he brings a Gemara later, and he, from the Sfasemis. He brings the following. It says that if a person does not bow at Modim, his spine turns into a snake after 7 years of after his death, after 7 years, 2 years. That's what he brings over here. And he explains it, and Sfasemis explains it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, we're the only animal that walks ramrod straight, completely erect. The reason is, it's an expression of self-mastery, of standing independent. We say in Berachas HaMazon, Rachma Yelcheinu Komemias Latzeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bring us upright, standing upright to our country, you know, it's proud and head held high. It's a sense of declaring self. Bowing is submission. So if we're to ask ourselves what organ in the person's body expresses most the sense of self, it would be the spine. And the spine is that which is the person. As an independent being, as unbowed, as not submitting to anyone. When we say modim, so we say all Shmona Esra. All of Shmona Esra is asking for something. And whenever you ask for something, there is a little bit of humility. Could you give me this? Could you give me this? So there is some humility. But to acknowledge, the word modim means thanks. The word modim also comes from the word hoidah, which means admission. What do we do when we thank somebody? Why is it, you know, we prompt a kid, you didn't say thank you, say thank you, say thanks, say thank you. What is it about thank you that's so important? So let's imagine I have a cheap pen, a 50 cent pen, kind of a 10 cent pen, whatever it is, and someone comes over and asks me, could I use it? I would certainly say yes, why not? Anybody would say yes. Once, twice, three times, fine. Imagine the person comes over and takes it without asking me. Once, twice, three times, he makes it a habit, he just takes it. Most everybody will get a bit annoyed and say, you'll sort of hint and say, you can take it if you want. The exchange there is, I don't mind, it doesn't cost anything, and I don't mind using it. But what I do mind is that you don't acknowledge my ownership. You're making it yours. That's something that I find very irritating. You're taking a piece of me and mine and make it yours. As long as you ask for it, saying thank you is an acknowledgement. So imagine somebody gave me a wonderful idea and I used this idea for the share. So it's very nice. The person expects me minimally to say thank you. Because the one thing, it's fine, I'm glad you used it, but acknowledge it's mine. Taking something that's yours and taking it over is so modim is an acknowledgement that the things that we strut around and sort of present as ourselves is really HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why bowing is what we do at Modim, because that's what bowing is. It's taking the spine, which expresses the self, the confident self, the accomplished self, and acknowledges that really you're the one that's on top, and I'm being mishtachbe. That's what Modim is. If a person doesn't bow at Modim, we're not talking about the laziness or forgetfulness. That's not we're talking about. Doesn't bow at Modim means the person down deep does not have the sense of acknowledgement to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the psychological person who, you know, Hashem is there, but it's something that's not the person. So then it says it becomes a snake. The snake was the animal that stood straight like a human, stood high like a human, and he came along, he invented the following mantra. He said, "V'yisim kelokim yodea tovara." You don't have to be God's people. You can be God's colleague. You can share. You don't have to submit. The nachash was the, and that's why he said to break the commandment. He said, breaking the commandment was, don't tell me what to do. One of the reasons that we get, you know, if somebody tells us, especially parents, if they tell us what to do. So a little bit is laziness. We don't always want to do. But there's something else. What do you think I am? I'm your slave. I'm your servant. I'm at your beck and call. What really irritates us more than anything else is the sense of, I am now submitting to your wishes. You want me to pick this? I want to do this, want this or this? That's where it becomes irritating. That's why a person would rather sort of be very smug and self-assured and sort of kind of... So even if he gives lip service to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he really doesn't feel that way. I want to share an experience of somebody, very difficult experience, but it left a profound impression on me. Many, many years ago, this was... I think this was before I'd come here. This was when I was living in Eretz Yisrael. I had an acquaintance, quite a firm person, who made it very well in business. Really became extremely successful and had a lot of businesses going. He began to become extremely arrogant and smug. And he told somebody who worked for him, a common friend actually, you know, anybody could become wealthy if they really want to. If you're not wealthy, it's because you haven't put in what it takes, and because you don't want to be wealthy. And it was kind of. And he would give a lot of tzedakah, but it was done, you know, it was done like on Purim. There'd be a big parade of people coming, and he would. It fed into the worst parts of this person's personality. The person had very nice parts of himself, but had some difficult parts. Within 3 days, all of his business crashed. Something happened that triggered a whole avalanche of stuff, and everything was wiped out. He spent the next 20 years in courts with penniless, and really, as far as I know, this still situation is very... I went to see him. I was on a trip to Israel, and I went to see this person. You know, this person was down, was crushed, was also became not well because of it. And he told me, he said, "Aaron, you know, one good thing came out of this whole collapse. I finally realized there's a Ribbono Shel Olam in the world." And I was stunned. So this person was always very frum. And we're not talking about the pro forma frum stuff. We're talking about the inner recognition that is, as something being channeled through me, or am I the accomplished person? It can be in money, it could be in other successes, and most important, it could be in knowledge and understanding. When a scientist approaches, Rav Soloveitchik has in his introduction to The Lonely Man of Faith an extraordinary description of the dichotomy between the scholar or scientist and the maimon. It's not about dinosaur bones, not about how old. That's nonsense. He said, those are not the important questions. He says, imagine you see this incredible mountain. There are two approaches. One is awe, and one is a desperate need to conquer it. A non-religious person, I'm talking about the full sense of the word, when he sees something big, he says, I will conquer it because I am the master of the world. It'll take me my whole life, but I'll conquer it, I'll understand it, I'll present it. I'm talking much deeper than just the kavod and it's because my world starts with me, centers around me, and everything else, all accomplishments are my accomplishments. A maimon understands HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the center of the world, and I become bigger when I allow more divine chachma, das, and so on to filter through me. So it requires two things. It requires the sense of humility, the sense of I am open, hineni, and the sense of the when to acquire. Just being humble and sleeping is not going to do it. The person needs to the person needs to work to attain that knowledge. But understanding the knowledge is God's knowledge that He allows us to hook into. And becoming close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in Klal Yisrael's when Klal Yisrael's picture of things is correct, then we haven't had big Tetatimei Chachamim that were not big Yirei Elokim. Klal Yisrael writes off people who might be very scholarly, but they don't allow Ribbono Shel Olam into their world. So Kaponim, let's just sum up. What he's saying here is that Yavan and Klal Yisrael, on the face of it, are very similar. People that see wisdom and knowledge and understanding as being the supreme virtues of a person. And that seems to be very close to us. And yet Yavan had it in for us. They broke through and they made 13 breaches in the Chayil. The Chayil was the section where we said from a certain point onwards, it's only for the people that are Hashem's. It's just like a house. There is an area that a person coming in off the street has a place. And then there's my private house. And only if you belong to my family do you have a place there. Yavan saw greatness of man as being man-centered. And therefore, any type of idea that you can do something or be somebody where more knowledge will flow to you and make you bigger and better didn't exist. Yavan, it was man-centered, and therefore God was another object to study. I can study and understand God, but just like a kind of psychologist person who understands other people to manipulate them, I'm the outsider trying to boss you around. I'm trying to get control over you. Klal Yisrael has a very different picture about this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the center of it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the fount of knowledge, understanding, and everything. The closer we draw to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more we are of that. The great man is great because he has shaped himself in a way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can connect to him. It comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, with the places that the Yavanim broke through arrogantly, when I break the door down, it means I am invading your space because I'm going to master your space. The Klal Yisrael made his tachavos. This is where Klal Yisrael bowed down and said, to get in to the inner sanctum, you need to make yourself humble. You need to take the self of yourself and make it a platform for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And almost paradoxically, that's where you become a great person. We should be zocher. Chanukah is a time that deals with some very fundamental areas of Klal Yisrael and their essence and so on. And Bezazim, we should be zocher to be able to have both parts of it, to understand how to humble ourselves to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then fill ourselves with understanding and chachma and aura of Kadosh Baruch Hu.